Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Sync Call for 23rd of August, 2017. Let's get started with RFC number 101, which is at RFC for Improved Iter Tools API. This has gone through a final comment period. I think it's ready for vote. Have people had a chance to have a look? Anybody? Bueller? I had a look. I think it's great. I'd vote for it. Anyone else?
I would just do.
Okay, great. Fantastic. So many looks goods. Excellent. I'm going to merge it. And Theo, will you do the honors?
Yeah, sure.
Awesome. Squash and merge. There we go. It's in. Okay. Next, let's pop back to, unless there's any of the RFCs that people want to chat about, or looking okay on that front. Okay. In that case, let's have a look at some PRs. Let's start with 2186. So, the do not merge tag has been taken off, but Sean hasn't made a comment as to it looking good. Although all the checks are passing, everything looks fine. Andy, do you know anything about this one? 2186? Should we merge this? The changes look reasonable to me. Okay. If we're not sure, then let's not merge it. Is anyone, well, anyway. So 2183 is marked needs discussion, but also do not merge. This is the Dragonfly BSD support. Looks like a bunch of small stuff. It looks like it's in pretty good shape. So it's marked do not merge, but it looks like we could, actually.
Sean said on the in a comment that he still had some question on that. So I think we should wait okay. For him to join later.
Okay, great.
In the call.
Okay, sounds good. In that case, Joe isn't here, so we might just skip over 2168 because it's still do not merge, and it's Joe's work. In which case, yeah, there's a couple others that are not going through at the moment, so I think that's about it. 2188 hasn't passed checks yet, and I think it needs although it's been updated, so it looks like as soon as that merges, that should be good to go. Oh, nice.
Yeah, and the test passed before, so since it's just a stack change, if it's good to you, I think we can merge right now. Since there is a lot of backlog
on Travis. Okay, cool. Let me just have a quick double check. So we're picking up the type, and if it's nominal or type param ref, we do a UIF set, and otherwise we punt on the... I think if... Okay, an internal error? Okay. Because we could pony assert on that error instead, right? And pick it up that way. But still, I think that's reasonable. Yeah, sure. Let's merge it. Let's go with it. Done. Okay. Are there any other open PRs that we want to go through? No? Okay. This is a quiet one so far. Let's go to issues. So the first one that needs discussion is 2185. Okay, so file.line reads one byte at a time. Does it really? That seems crazy. Who wrote that? Probably me. Just having a quick load at look at Well, I will if I'm confused why this is saying it's doing one byte at a time. It's not.
It's in file, the method line, in line 225, it sets bytes to read to one.
And ah, the, I see.
This and is, it never updates it.
Someone made a change to this at some point. This is not what was originally implemented, which you can tell if you look at some of the other code that stores a last line length. This used to, when it was originally written, which I happen to know because I wrote it originally, used a last line length and did handle all this buffering itself. So that's why this is slow now, is that someone has changed this. I think we ought to just fire up a little bit of git blame here. No offense, everybody. And figure out why this was changed. Because reading one byte at a time is there's just no circumstance under which that's acceptable. It's never, ever, ever a good choice. Okay. Okay, this came through with some changes from Dippin that were brought in. Okay, that's a straight up bug and needs to be fixed. Let me make a quick comment on this. That should be high priority because that's just a terrible, terrible situation to have that. Okay, cool. So the next one is 2182, which is a crash in Gen Match, excitingly. Oh, Joe's diagnosed that rather well, actually. I'm going to take off the needs discussion because Joe's diagnosis is right.
So I don't have the full context, but I think I see a solution for that one.
Ah, great.
I think what we could do is set the next block to a block with an unreachable LLVM terminator. So So I'm not sure whether the bug is that we are building that branch instead of checking the pattern of doing something else.
You know, but I think you're right. I think branching to an unreachable would be perfectly reasonable.
Okay, so I'll add a comment on that. And
I just did. Okay. Saying that you said that we should do that, and I think that's right.
Okay, cool.
All right. And 2178.
Yeah, this one's by me.
Ah, excellent.
I could quickly sum it up.
Sure.
Yeah, triple quoted strings are properly allowed as literals, but they get trimmed in some weird way.
Okay.
Based on the indent of the first line, in general, like remove, which is fine for doc strings, but I feel like string literals should be kept as they are in the code.
Ah, that's interesting. So one of the reasons that it can be nice to have indenting stripped is that for example, if you look at, so Scala has the ability to specify a new beginning, as it were, right, with the pipe syntax. Is that, do I have that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So it strips everything up to that.
Right. And we could steal that. So the reason it does it this way is that what you want to avoid is that situation that people have picked up in Perl and other languages like that, where you end up slamming all your string literals all the way to the left, and it can be a little unpleasant. But but your point is good.
So for me,
because it's very, yeah, this is interesting. So this is an excellent issue, by the way. Thank you. Okay. Huh. You've got a lot of good cases here.
Yeah. So for in my feeling, the best way to solve this, if I may suggest, would be to leave the string as it is and add a behavior like strip margin and Scala. So it remains as convenient to just give string literals the way one's used to with the indentation of the code where it's defined, and then just strip it off.
Yeah, that's interesting. So,
and move the handling of indent removal maybe to the doc gen where it's actually needed.
Instead of in the lexer.
Yes.
Interesting. Yeah, so the Python approach is to leave absolutely everything in there, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. And that's why you do get the situation in Python as well, where people slam their string literals up against the left-hand side.
So I just wanted to mention that triple quoted strings are not only just used in docgen. Like, if you're writing, if you've got some huge, source code sequence that you want to paste into and, treat as a string in your program, you can use a triple string literal too. There's something special about triple string literals versus a normal double string, double quote literal. Like, it's they both come out as a string, and there are, I think, valid use cases for treating using a triple string literal for an actual string value in your program. And so, whatever we choose here, we'll have to be careful that we are technically breaking, if we change the way it handles indents, we're technically breaking a change there. And people will have to deal with the consequences, not just in docgen, but also if they're using it in their programs.
Yeah.
And that will affect the changelog tool because that's done there.
Yeah. So it's interesting about what behavior is expected, because I'm going through your playground example. Thank you for providing a playground example. I think that's really cool. And I think it's interesting because none of the examples in your playground example is actually how I personally use triple quoted strings, which is interesting. So what I do is I always put the triple quote on a new line of its own, and the contents on the next new line, so that basically there's a string block delimited by those triple quotes, and the triple quotes then also imply where the margin is because your text lines up with the triple quote. Am I making any sense?
Yes.
And as a result, when I run stuff in the playground, I get exactly what I expect, which is interesting. Not surprising in that, programmer gets result programmer expects is not really all that very interesting. And it's more about making sure that other people get the result that they expect. I'd certainly be willing to talk about other ways to handle triple quoted strings. What I'd like to avoid is the situation where people have to line all their text up against the left hand of the text editor, because I find that really unfortunate.
So one suggestion here that might work would be to base the indent removal on the indent level of the defining of the code, let's say line that defines the string literal. So, but it again is unclear to me. For example, I have an example here that's named without leading new line.
Without leading new line, yes.
So the third one in this example with half leading new line, and it has like one line with an indentation of two white spaces and one with four.
Right.
And if we would just base it on the indentation of the line, then we would like how to handle this case. It again is kind of inconsistent.
So, I would just mention that I think that what the example output that you give right now is, it is actually, you know, I think it's behaving how I would expect it to work as well, but okay. The issue is that the without leading new line is not something that I'm used to thinking about, because it's I'm not used to seeing triple quoted string literals with anything else on the line where the literal begins. It always starts at the next line.
Yeah, me too.
So I'm wondering if maybe one way to tackle this is to disallow any further characters on the line where the literal starts.
Oh, that's interesting. And say you must just make it a check at the sugar stage that says, oh, really, that's got to have a carriage return there.
Yeah, you have to have a leading new line. We don't accept the without leading new line case.
Okay.
That's quite interesting.
Yeah. Yes, it would solve the cases here.
And then the with leading new line works exactly how we expect. It's all lined up. The way that I do it, where actually the triple quote goes on a new line and then the string starts on the line after that, also works as we expect. And the one with the partial indent is the second line is indeed two spaces indented. That's interesting. Yeah, that sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah, for whatever it's worth, the style that I like for triple quoted strings is actually usually, it's not Sylvan style, and it's also not the style shown in this ticket. I tend to indent, if I'm using it as like a code block and not as a doc string, I tend to indent an extra indent level inside the quotes. So, but what we're talking about would also work for that.
Yeah, it works exactly the same. Yeah. Because it's not indenting based on where the triple quote is, it's indenting based on the line, and it's actually for exactly that reason, is to handle that kind of indenting. Using triple quotes like a delimiter and indenting inside it.
Yeah.
Well, so far, first of all, thanks is a good issue. I lean towards Joe's solution of saying, let's make the carriage return or the new line, I should say. The new line that I've been thinking of is implicitly always used. Maybe we make it necessarily always used. Does that sound...
No, that I think about it, yes. The case with the partial indent wouldn't be solved by that. I don't have a problem with the... with a rule that is applied to, so you can get used to it and you can handle it. It's like edge cases here. But right. The way that puzzles me is that it's based on the content of the string.
Yes.
So if we say, I don't know if that's the right approach.
As opposed to, say, based on...
As keep like treat it as a literal without any changes, or treat it based on the level of indentation of its definition
of where the triple quotes are, as opposed to where the string
is.
Yeah, the problem there is that you couldn't do exactly the situation that Joe wants to do, which is to be able to indent inside the triple quotes and have delimiter approach then would stop working.
Yes.
And I think it's also not necessarily trivial to, I don't know, I think it's a bit of a weird rule, the way that you outlined it in this ticket, where it's okay. Looking at the indentation level of, like, not the beginning of the quote, but the beginning of, like, everything else on that line. That feels a little bit odd to me. Like, I feel like if it... it's surprising to me that that it would be basically starting where the you're looking at the indentation level of that let rather than the indentation level of the quote character itself.
Oh yeah, that would be weird. I mean, you could try and make it the quote characters itself, but then you'd have some really awkward lining up to do at times.
Yeah, yeah. It's not an optimal one.
Interesting.
I admit.
Here's another edge case we haven't talked about yet, I think, which is the with half leading new line case, but if you switch the order of the two X's so that the more deeply indented one goes first, what is the indent level of, like, what does that output look like?
I think it's the same.
If the deep one goes first,
if you have the one with the four spaces preceding the one with the two spaces.
Yeah, so it's based on the minimum indent of all the lines. So you'll get the first one is two spaces indented, and the second one is zero spaces indented. And then there's a blank line with a two space indent, because the triple quote is there.
Right. Interesting. Okay. Okay. So yeah, that's another thing maybe we should talk about is the way the final triple quote gets handled.
Yeah, I was just wondering if maybe what we want to do is say we strip any blank lines.
I wouldn't necessarily think of it that way because you might want to have an explicit blank line.
Oh, I'm sorry. I meant if the last line where the triple quote is composed entirely of spaces, we strip those spaces.
Well, and to go a step further, you might want to say that we don't allow any non-white space characters there, just like we don't allow any on the first line.
Ah. So it says, please line up that quote with the end of the string, essentially?
Well, so it says that you can't have, for the same reason that it'd be the same kind of thing, like while we were disallowed the without leading new line. It's that, like, you can't have, you can't have any other characters next to the beginning or end of your quotes. They all have to be on the lines in between.
Right. Yeah.
And then we do the minimum indent thing.
Right.
Based on those lines, and then we decide, I guess, whether we want a trailing new line in like the Unix style, like a trailing empty line.
Right.
Or whether we would want without. Probably with the trailing new line.
I suspect with, but then it gives, then people put their trailing triple quote on the ending line in order to get rid of the trailing line, the trailing new line. And that's okay, I think.
Oh, but yeah, I see what you mean. So that was the thing that I just said we should disallow, so.
Well, I think it's slightly different from what you said, isn't it? Where you can have a character turn, but that's it before that. You can't. Oh, no, I see what you mean. No, it is exactly what you said.
Yeah, so the rule I was suggesting would require you to either not give anyone a choice whether it has a trailing new line at the end, and just say it always does, whether you like it or not, and you have to trim it off if you don't want it, the other alternative would be it never has a trailing new line, and you have to have an explicit one if you want one.
Right.
So I'm not sure either one of those is good.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, so I guess I'm going back to your idea of trimming off any non-new line white space characters
on the final line.
Final line.
Yeah. If it is in fact all white space, because if it isn't, then you put it there on purpose, right?
Yeah.
If you had if you had printable characters followed by white space followed by your triple quote without any new lines, then we would, of course, keep the trailing white space.
Yeah, otherwise it would be impossible to write that string.
Right.
Yeah. Does anybody have, other things to add or change about that set of rules? So basically, what we'd be going with to sum it up is disallow any characters on the line where the string literal begins.
So I've just noticed something interesting by playing with this darn thing. Curiouser and curiouser. We don't trim white space. So actually, if you have a line that is printable characters followed by white space and then more of your string, that trailing white space is actually kept in the string.
Isn't that what we just said we wanted it to be?
Yeah, but I mean for lines other than the one with the triple quote. I'm not saying that's wrong, but it did surprise me.
Yeah, I mean, so basically just if you have trailing white space in your block of text.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would think that's what you want, though.
I think you're right. It just surprised me because it trims the leading white space but not the trailing white space. And clearly that's right. It just surprised me. So there you go. Joe, would you mind summarizing some of this stuff on the ticket, on the open issue?
Yeah, I'll summarize it on the ticket. I just wanted to check in and see if anyone had any more discussion about this, or if we're generally okay with the rules that Sylvan and I just discussed.
So I'm much in favor of having the string starting on a new line, so not allowing anything on the first line, but I'm afraid will it also apply for single quoted strings?
No, for single quoted strings, those will stay exactly the same as they are right now. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, you should be clear about that. No string, no change in the single quoted string. Okay.
So yeah, so enforcing the string to be exactly between the two lines with the triple quote strings would make the behavior much more consistent and expected.
Cool. That's what we want to hear.
In my opinion.
Excellent.
And I don't know where the right place is, but I would like to see this documented somewhere. I don't know if the tutorial is a good place for this.
I think it is, actually. That seems like a pretty good place to do it.
Yes. I can also step in and do it.
Oh, that would be fantastic.
Woo!
maybe handling literals in general.
I open an issue in
the tutorial.
That would be perfect. Thank you. Yeah, no excellent. Problem. All right. So I'm going to take off needs discussion, and I think we're going to mark this actually as a bug, and it's not exactly a bug. Maybe we should mark it as an enhancement.
I think it's buggy enough.
I think it's a bug.
Okay, bug ready for work.
Once he wrote that up, I was like, that's a bug.
Yeah. I'm writing up a summary, so it'll be done soon.
Thank you very much.
And I'm going to add the documentation tag as well, because that's important too. Nice one. Okay. So what else is on there? 2158, which is the file path walk, silently throws a lot of errors. Oh dear, so it does.
You have no idea. Yeah, there's a lot.
Ah.
I don't really know what to
say. I would call this a performance bug.
Yes, I definitely think so.
And say that, yeah, this needs fixing, essentially.
So how about bug, ready for work, difficulty, easy?
Yeah, sounds right.
Right. Yeah, that's one of the many things I found while looking for, when I went looking for, why is the HTTP server slow?
Yeah.
Oh, actually, no, this is from a different place.
Is it?
Yeah, no, this came from somebody asking a question on IRC.
And I thought you meant in a different place in the, and I was like, no, I'm looking at Glob. It's definitely.
No. And I went looking, I was like, oh, that's not so good.
Yeah. All right. We are just past the halfway point on the call. So this is the traditional time in which everyone is invited to bring up anything they like.
I have two PRs.
Excellent. That we didn't get to? Oh, yeah, that's right, because we backed up because we wanted you to be on the call. Yes, indeed. 2186 looks like it's ready to go. Don't see any problem with that.
Good Lord, that took much longer than I thought it was going to. And I found multiple bugs which were unrelated in the process of getting the test passing.
All right.
Including the bug which caused caused the entire terminal that I was running all of my stuff in to shut down and then take down the Finder.
Nice one. That's a good bug. Okay. Well, there you go. I'm going to go ahead and merge this, unless anyone has a problem with 2186. All right. Then I will squash it, and I will merge it. I have squashed it, and I have merged it. And the next one is 2183, which I wasn't clear why that says do not merge and why it says needs discussion, because it looks fine.
Because there are a couple of things I wanted to go over. One, in order to get to get Dragonfly to work, it installs some of the dependencies in user local lib, and we're not set up to look there by default. I currently have it being specifically for Dragonfly, but I think that we should just add it for any of the Unixes in general, unless somebody has an objection.
I have absolutely no problem with that. So a lot of times, a Unix will be set up, a particular Unix install will always look in user local lib. So essentially what we're doing if we do this is we're saying, oh, you didn't say to always look in user local lib, but we're going to do it anyway. And I have no problem with that.
All right. So the next thing I wanted to discuss on this is this deviates from what we said we wanted the last time, which is I went to try and make this be all, okay, we're just going to have BSD, right? Like the way we have Linux.
Yeah.
And then I realized that Dragonfly and FreeBSD are entirely different operating systems that happen to share a commonality. So what I did was there is the definition of BSD. And if you look in like platform.pony in here, you'll see there's a BSD definition, there's a FreeBSD definition, and there's a Dragonfly definition. Because some things are supported on BSDs in general, right?
Uh-huh.
And some things.
So this is very much like the POSIX definition.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's totally reasonable.
So it's like, okay, this is, yeah, here we go. This is BSD is any of these two right now.
Yeah, I think that's completely reasonable. And I think actually looking at it, it's very pleasing that you did this. It seems very symmetric with POSIX to say, look, here's POSIX and here's BSD, which is a subset of POSIX, but also contains many operating systems. And I think that sounds right. Interestingly, it's... looking at it, I would kind of expect OS X to be in the BSD category. I know it isn't, and it shouldn't be, But because it of Darwin, it sort of feels like it would be, but it's not. And there you go.
Yeah, I had the same like sort of passing thought as well.
Yeah, but it just isn't. Because it doesn't actually implement a current, a completely up-to-date BSD kernel.
While we're on that subject, does anybody think that we should, this is just another thing that came to mind when we were talking about it, does anybody think that we should rename the OS X platform to Darwin, as some other languages / systems do when referring to that platform?
I think that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm of two minds on this. The first is that it does make sense, because it does. The second is that it should definitely, whatever it's called, shouldn't be called OS X, because there isn't anything called OS X anymore since they changed the name to macOS again. And they're going to keep doing that, whereas Darwin is going to be more stable. And yet, people know what macOS or OS X is, and they don't know what Darwin is. And there you go. But I still lean towards, yeah, we should change it to Darwin. Anyone else have any thoughts on it?
Yeah, I mean, I had basically the same thoughts. Like, Darwin is more, like, accurate, like, as a platform and, like, not so much as, like, a brand. But it's less recognizable, probably, for that same reason.
I
don't want to update all of our code to deal with the OS X being Darwin thing. But, yeah, okay. Sure. One more break.
It might make sense, especially with, I didn't know the rename from OS X to Mac OS was like official thing.
Yeah, it's
that's exactly how I feel about it. It is indeed exactly.
I did have one last thing I wanted to go over.
Cool.
In the PR before I would squash it down everything. Can you look in spout 3/4 of the way down in kq.c? I wasn't sure if this is the correct. I tried to model it off of some stuff that we did, but there's the where the K event flag types are different types between
They're
the two.
Different types.
Yeah. So is for the naming that we use elsewhere, should that be K event flag T? Should it be K event flag?
K event flag T is perfect.
Okay. I first had a K event flag, and then I was like, well, I see some cases where we have it both ways.
Yeah.
And
so technically, everything ending in _ T is a reserved keyword in C99 or later and is illegal in user code. In actual fact, that's how everyone names every single type that they use in C for every program ever.
I was totally unaware of that because it's so common, yeah.
Yeah, and so, yes, K-Event flag T is fine.
Okay. So, in that case, I'm going to make the, I'll make the one, I'll make the one make file change on that. Sometime in the next day or so. Cool. And I'll squash it. And then the process one was a high priority, so I'll do a release sometime this weekend or something.
Sweet.
Or when I have a night when I'm not. Yeah. I've been chasing a bug.
Uh oh.
That's the thing where I asked if you could stick around and be my duck, Sylvan.
Yep. So you bet.
Okay. Those are my two things. Let's move on with other things.
All right, cool.
Also, beware, now once this is merged, I'm probably going to get bored and I'm going to add OpenBSD support.
Oh, yay!
And NetBSD support because...
Yay, because they are BSDs.
I remembered as part of this that I find the process of porting applications from one Unix-like platform to another to be a really soothing mental experience.
So I
might be the only one.
Yeah, that's one of you, and I'm glad you exist. I'm inordinately fond of OpenBSD, and I have nothing to explain that, but I'm very glad that you want to do this. Cool. So let us pop back onto issues. Is there anything that people particularly want to cover? Because we have about 13 minutes left, and I want to make sure people get what they want covered. Oh, I see one that I'd like to look at, which is 2156, structure finalizers are broken. Is that okay to look at?
Sure.
Yeah, so I don't know if you remember, but before, sometimes ago, we called the heap finalizers through the object map.
Yeah.
And we did an optimization some times ago. And now we use a bitmap in directly in the heap data structure to call the final result through the object type destructor.
Yep.
And that doesn't work for structs since
they
don't have type destructors.
They sure don't. Huh. Ooh, boy. That's hard. Because by the time we're GCing, we don't have static type information for that memory block. And we don't want to write it out of band because that's exactly the thing that we were fixing by doing it through bitmaps. Yeah, that's hard. Now, we do have static type information when a struct with a finalizer is allocated, and we could special case structs with finalizers as going as using an out-of-band mechanism for saying this is a finalizer that has to be run. But it seems unfortunate to have to keep track of that. But it may be the only way to do it. The other option, of course, is to say that we make finalizers and structs illegal and say when it's a struct, you're going to have to call that by hand and code it up slightly differently, you know, so that you can have a final but not an underscore final. And so you can't get true finalization behavior over a struct. I don't know if that's an acceptable way to do it or not. Andy, you still here?
Yes, I'm still here. What's up?
Do finalizers play into any of the stuff that you've worked with on interacting with GC and C and C++ and all that fun stuff?
Sorry, can you give me a quick...
Sorry about that.
No, my fault. I was looking at something else.
Very, totally reasonable. We're looking at 2156, which is struct finalizers are broken. And what I'm wondering is if we made finalizers illegal on structs in Ponyland, would that mess up any of the stuff that you've worked with? Because I think you've done the most sort of C++ Pony interop for GC.
I can't think of anything offhand. But I'm also going to say that for the most part, I've avoided using structs when I've been able to.
Well, yeah, of course, for obvious reasons.
I mean, sorry to give a shitty answer like that.
No, it's a perfectly reasonable answer. And in fact, because structs are designed for representing a seed data type that you're looking at rather than defining something new, it kind of makes sense to say we're going to make finalizers illegal on them because you're dealing with C code.
It's not your stuff, really, I guess is the way I'd put it.
Yeah, why does a struct need a finalizer?
Well, that's exactly what we're talking about. It's a good question.
Sometimes you need a chainsaw, Sean.
So I think the two options here are either to special case struct finalizers and keep a separate garbage collection structure of struct finalizers to be run when memory goes out of scope, or to say that underscore final as a method in a struct is a compile time error.
I think it should be a compile time error unless somebody can come up with a good reason for why it needs to exist.
Okay.
That's my take. Like I cannot come up with a use case in my mind for why you would want it. So to me right now, we'd just be carrying around extra code and the possibility of bugs.
Yeah.
Now I know I was talking with Benoit about this in IRC. And I think this was, so I'm trying to remember if this particular issue ticket is the only reason why you should not do this, or if there's another reason why you should not do this, where this is you basically when you're dealing with like a C library that has its own free function for cleaning up some object you're dealing with, call that from the finalizer. Are there other reasons not to use that pattern? I mean, basically, what we came up with was that you should always like keep the struct pointer. As a pointer in Pony, like the pointer type, like within a class that you manage, and then use the finalizer of that class as the one to call the cleanup function. I'm trying to remember if this issue ticket was the only reason why that is required, or whether
it's actually just good practice in general. Because in fact, it wouldn't even have to be as a pointer type. You could have a struct and then in your finalizer call the cleanup function. And the reason is that finalization tends to play poorly with those kinds of C-style free calls. And the reason is that you often need to coordinate them because they're effectively doing, well, often literally doing free under the hood. And you need to coordinate bits and pieces of them in specific orders, which is exactly what finalizers don't let you do.
Right. Okay. I'm fine with that answer. And actually, if that's the better practice in general anyway, then this compiler error will, kind of redirect people to using that.
To do that. Oh, that's a good point. Yeah. All right. I'm going to put a quick note on here that the general consensus is that underscore final in a struct should be a compile time error.
And yeah, and if anyone can come up with a compelling reason for it to not be
exactly
at that later time.
No, I think exactly what Sylvan said. It's like, you're going to fuck something up.
All right, I put a preliminary comment on there. Oops, I need to go back and edit that. I forgot to say. exactly forgot to say what Joe said to say. There we go. I think that basically sums it up, unless anyone wants to add some more. All right. Okay, cool. That takes us almost to the end of our allotted time. I kind of jumped in there on one that I wanted to talk about. Sorry about that. Is there any that others would like to talk about? Basically okay for now?
I'm good for now.
Fantastic. Thanks, everybody, for coming. And I'm going to hit the unrecord button. Here we go.